This is a crusade. This is a holy war against the deep state.
Where are the dictators? Where are the strong men?
Donald Trump is our instrument for retribution.
I'm going to fight for Christians. I'm going to fight for white people.
They have the Great Reset. We have the Great Awakening.
And why shouldn't I root for Russia?
Because I am.
I want to see these people go through misery because of their grooming against our children.
After the assailant entered the home asking, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" Those are the very same words used by the mob when they stormed the United States Capitol.
I did nothing wrong.
Welcome to the Did Nothing Wrong podcast, where we cut through the noise and help you make sense of the chaotic information space around us. I'm Griff Somke. As the 2024 United States general election kicks off, both sides are gearing up their information machinery. On this episode of the Did Nothing Wrong podcast, Carl Folk from the Institute of Unreality joins me once again to talk from his perspective as a sociologist about election signs and what we can observe from a drive across the Midwestern USA. Stick around. Carl, welcome back to Did Nothing Wrong. Glad to see you made it.
Yeah, great to be back. Good to be chatting with you again on this nice and fine spring day.
Certainly is. So you took a road trip recently.
I did.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah. You know, I try and take kind of a temperature reading, let's say, for lack of a better term, of kind of the rural groups around where I live in Minnesota and then to the south. And so I tend to drive south from Minneapolis into Iowa and then go through the country. And for me, one of the things that I tend to look for are road signs.
Right.
One of the things that the Midwest loves is using their farmland to do a little bit of free promotion for their own feelings. And you get a good temperature for the state of things on the ground that you just can't get by reading news, by even talking to reporters who have talked to people on the ground.
Right.
I find it much more useful as a sociologist and as someone who really is interested in why people act the way they do, to actually see it myself, to see what context there is, to see what the overarching feeling is on the ground in those areas.
Right.
And it's been interesting after doing it for, this is kind of my fifth year now, doing these runs. And things have changed subtly in some places and in other places more overtly. And one of the signs that I tend to look for in Iowa when I'm on the route is a sign that's on a larger farm. And up until recently, it had been a rather benign, albeit awful, message that was anti-abortion.
Right.
And that shifted last year to more explicitly anti-trans sentiment. And now this year, it shifted again to an extremely hard anti-immigration message.
Oh, boy.
And that was the big shift that I would say overall that I saw on this drive, is the shift from conservative, don't get me wrong, messaging to more overtly kind of brainwormed online conservative messaging. And seeing that in the real world,
right,
is jarring. Because it means something has shifted and there's been a change. And to see a sign that was like abortion is sin switch to an anti-LGBTQ message and then to a extremely hard anti-immigration message followed by a close all borders and seal America. You know, these are pretty big shifts, I would say.
Right.
And that was, like I said, that's like the biggest noticeable shift I saw. A number of the signs that were traditionally either just kind of loosely conservative or even MAGA signage that had traditionally been Trump-Pence signs or Trump is king, you know, the weird stuff that you see, that had shifted to seal the borders, close America.
Huh.
So it's a really interesting shift from some of the more, you know, something that the Republicans achieved, right? Like the anti-abortion crusade, that shifted. And seeing the LGBTQ signs and then seeing that shift even in a year to this more overt anti-immigration message and something that is more overtly white supremacist, right? Like this is a real interesting shift and something that I think is more disconcerting in that way, right? It's not an overt, like, MAGA level dog whistle.
Right.
It's something much more insidious.
Well, and it also sounds like this is the kind of thing that is less of a specifically kind of MAGA social issue and more of a social issue that is something that various groups of people are going to talk about. I mean, we've seen the Democrats in Congress try to make common cause with the Republicans on an immigration deal. And it almost sounds like these people have decided that they think immigration is going to be a winner as far as electoral issues go for them this year.
It has that feeling. This has the feeling of something that is building towards something, not something that is achieving goals in those small towns, right?
Like, right.
This time was tough. I didn't have as much time to talk to people as I have in the past. But one of the things that repeatedly comes up is this fear that something has changed. And that is what this messaging really says, right? Like, this is a pretty interesting change in that way. And to even see some of the signs that had been giant Make America Great posters flipped over to either Epoch Times ads.
Oh boy.
For real news, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Or signs that have explicitly flipped over to this more just isolationist message. Right. And I think it does go to what you were saying. This feels much more like someone feels like this is going to win.
Right.
As a political messaging tool. And, you know, it was interesting. I saw a number of MAGA, you know, Make America Great flags for 24. I saw as many as I see regularly. It wasn't actually anything new. But what I did see this time, which is now the second time I've seen it on these trips, is people are flying some very interesting flags on their property in those areas. And the one that has popped up more is the Appeal to Heaven flag.
Oh, really?
So I look to flags the same way I look at signs. These are public ways for people who generally don't have public, you know, a giant public presence to express themselves in a way that they feel comfortable with. And if you have an Appeal to Heaven flag flying on your property with an American flag and a MAGA flag, that is a very specific message you're sent.
And in case you're not familiar, the Appeal to Heaven flag just looks like a pine tree on a white background. And yes, it may or may not say an Appeal to Heaven above it.
Correct.
Some of them do, correct, some of them don't. It was originally used in the American Revolution. The design was General George Washington's secretary, Colonel Joseph Reed. It was a idea of freedom or death. It's a more extreme version of like the Gadsden flag to a large extent.
That's exactly right.
So if they're rolling that out, that's a very strong sign that they've been spending some time online lately and they've decided this is a good thing to put up on their property and this is the sentiment they're at.
Correct. In one of the small towns that I go to in Illinois, it's small.
Right.
It's 2,500 people. It's very much still a vibrant downtown in this small town. And there are a couple houses in this small town that are flying variations on that and the Christian, you know, the Christian nationalist flag.
Right.
And that's somewhat new. It's, you know, you do see it, but to see the Appeal to Heaven flag come out was one of the ones, again, it's signaling a shift. And it's not everywhere. You know, this isn't some monolithic thing, but it's definitely there. You know, I drove by a car that was pulling into one of these farms and it had a giant Trump cutout in his back window. And it just said, "I'm rolling with the king." You know, like this is a different, you know, it's a different feel.
Right.
And that isn't altogether all that new, right? This kind of Trump avatar thing isn't new, but some of the more overt signals that things have gotten more radicalized definitely seem to be there. And it's it's been really interesting to see since the pandemic specifically how fast that has shifted in some of these smaller towns and areas that are generally just not talked about, right?
Right.
Like not many people talk about, like, you know, Nashua, Iowa.
Sure, sure.
Right? But I think it's important to take the temperature.
Oh, yeah.
In the same way that someone, you know, Jeff Charlotte is a great example. Like, he knows what he's seeing in the same way, right? And when you look for signs, sometimes you see them, but sometimes they also present themselves to you. And this is one of those trips where it wasn't as in your face as it has been before.
Right.
You know, during the election season and that fall driving through that area, it was much more explicit. And it's a different kind of explicit. That was a political, we want Trump kind of explicit. This is something different. This is something that has these roots in hard, hard extremist ideology.
Right.
And to see it start showing up on farms and to see it start showing up in these small towns, it's metastasized, right? And we're starting, you know, seeing it in that way, I think, is important for people. Like, for me, I see it as a form of not just taking the temperature, but almost bearing witness, right? Like,
right.
There's this part of it that is like, this isn't just a political movement. This isn't something that we get to avoid because, politics are only politics. This is now going to be the fabric of our lives for generations. And for me, it's important to understand what that looks like in its stages of movement. Because if we can understand that, and we can understand why some communities that might not traditionally be talked about or thought about can resist that, that allows us a way to build a framework to talk to people.
Right.
In a way that allows us to write this.
Right. And that's definitely something, I mean, you're not wrong. I'm in the Seattle, Washington area, but if you go 20 miles outside of Seattle in just about any direction, you're going to see similar areas to that. If you get on a ferry boat heading towards the Olympic Peninsula, towards, you know, Forks, towards that area, you will see a whole lot of the same kind of signage. It gets real rural out there. And, you know, I noticed driving around before the 2016 election, there was a lot of Trump signs. I noticed that there were slightly less in 2020. There were a lot in 2022 after pandemic. And, you know, obviously I haven't been there in a month or so. I need to get out there and see what people are putting up. But it's definitely a great way to take the temperature of what people are kind of really thinking on the ground. Because if they're going to all the trouble to put up a sign, if they're going to all the trouble to put up a flag, they really believe in whatever it is they're posting. And they don't have a whole lot, like you said, of necessarily representation in the media or necessarily voice online. But if you live not too far from a state highway and you can put your flag up, you're going to get a lot of traffic.
Yeah, you're absolutely going to get a lot.
Thousands of people are going to see that over the course of a day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, and that's the part to me that's, I think it's important to understand that we all live in bubbles.
Right.
And one of the things that I really have tried to do, and it's not always easy, is get outside of the bubble that Minneapolis is.
Right.
Because as you said, this is everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. This is every city with outside of it. You're going to see this gradation, right? And it's the same kind of thing. And I think the more people understand that in both directions, right?
Right.
The better off we are that we can actually start to have the larger and harder conversation to have around how we actually start to neutralize some of this.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there is a way to do that, right? And it's going to involve talking with people and making inroads in communities that have felt like they were abandoned.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing that's come up in all of my treks. When you talk to people, one of the things that routinely comes up in small, and these are small towns, and they are very off the freeways generally.
Right, right.
Is, you know, the view is not that they've been left behind or forgotten, but it's just, how do we even make our way in a world that doesn't know we're here, right? And so it's an interesting place to be as someone who is a person who lives in a city, who has a different view, and understanding how we can bridge some of this. You're not going to be able to bridge to some of these people because they are lost causes.
Yeah.
But there are people in those communities who, you know, if they had the ability to have others who felt the same way they did, could mount reasonable pushback in those same spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in my mind, is how some of this has to go. We're never going to be able to de-radicalize our way out of this one person or one avenue sector of the right at a time. We have to have the larger thing happen, which is good people coming together and offering something that doesn't include what these other people are trying to sell. And for a long time, I've thought about the coalition aspect of anti-fascist thought and anti-extremist thought. And this is one of the few times where you can see how that might be put into practice in a way that is fully able to corral some of this. And it may, you know, we're not going to have a silver bullet that ends all of this, but there are steps we can be taking. And some of those steps require us getting outside of the comfort zone and bubble we have. And for me, that's really been a goal for myself, is to understand this better on a personal level of those who aren't fully in,
right,
but are flirting with it. I think a lot of us in bubbles look at things in a monolithic way, and it's this red state, blue state thing, and it's damaging us.
It is. It really is. And I'm thinking of a town in Washington called Sequim, and we're going to link to a couple articles about it in the show notes because it's really interesting. It's a it's in Clallam County, which is out on the Olympic Peninsula. It is the longest running presidential bellwether county in the United States.
Interesting.
They've picked the winner of every presidential election since Reagan. There were 19 counties that could say the same thing. 18 of those counties all lost in 2020 by going for Trump. Clallam went Biden. And Sequim was an interesting case because at one point in 2019, they elected a mayor by the name of William Armacost, who was a QAnoner. He was caught on camera at Costco wearing a t-shirt. This is according to The Nation, emblazoned with the stars and stripes, painted skull, and the words, "This is the USA. We eat meat. We drink beer. We own guns. We love freedom. We speak English. If you do not like it, get the fuck out." This is the mayor.
They elected a meme.
They elected that guy.
Yeah, they elected a meme. Mm-hmm. This is amazing.
They talked about the Antifa threat that was supposedly coming at city council meetings. They talked about QAnon. They literally, as a town, or at least that part of it did, went down the entire rabbit hole. He was talking QAnon on a local radio show. And finally, citizens got together and they pushed back on this guy.
Yeah.
They formed a Citizens for Good Governance, was what they called it. And in 2023, the last elections they had for the city stuff, they won everything. They ran this whole slate out of town because people realized, oh God, it's here. You know, this isn't something we really want.
No.
They think that this is something that they just don't need at all in their town.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, we're starting to see a lot. Well, not a lot, but you see stories, right? Where people really do recognize.
Right.
Uh-oh. This thing that we thought was kind of a, you know, an arm's length away problem, it is under our floor.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's, you know, we're starting to see it though, that exact thing. And the reason I think it's important to talk to these smaller towns, we're starting to see it with Moms for Liberty, for all, with all these different groups where any pushback is more than is needed to crush the ability for these people to own the narrative.
Because they haven't been pushed back on. They haven't really dealt with any level of serious pushback in a lot of these places.
Ever.
And in this case, it didn't come from Seattle. It came from folks that were locals. It came from people that were looking around at all of this kind of stuff and said, you know, this isn't who we are. This isn't the kind of town we are. These aren't the people that we think represent us. This isn't what we believe.
That's exactly it.
And I think a lot of places that's what it's going to take, is holding a mirror up to some extent and saying, you know, forget about Trump for a second. This isn't about Trump. This isn't about Biden. These are the people that are running your town. Are these the values you espouse?
Yeah.
Is this how you feel about life?
It's a values thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like the thing that you realize the more you get out is people want the best for them and theirs and their city and their friends and their communities. And the thing that keeps striking me time after time on these drives is there is no other representation in these places.
Right.
The Democrats aren't running candidates in small town Iowa.
No.
For the same reason they're not in Florida, because they don't understand the thing that's actually going on the ground. And that's the fail, one of the failures that I see that has allowed this to happen in some way. And it's not entirely a Democratic Party issue. This is a ground game issue across the board, right? Like the Republican Party decided that they weren't going to run candidates that would traditionally be seen as conservative. They ran, you know, they're running people who are far right of what the average farmer in northwestern Illinois gives a shit about.
Right.
They just, you know, but because, again, there's no counter, you have no way to do that, and you can't find the mirror then. If you give people the ability to say, is this who we are? Is this what we want?
Mm-hmm.
Generally, some people take that moment and say, oh, God, it's not.
Yeah.
It doesn't always happen. It's not always the case. But the more I see of these small towns, of these, and hear stories like that with Squim, you know, the more I truly believe the way that we do this is going to be almost county by county.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be by force or anything like that. The way that we're going to have to do this is with the force of the conversations had that show there's something else that's equally as beneficial to them or more so, but doesn't, you know, doesn't involve being a fascist.
Right? Yeah. And it's interesting that you make the point that Democrats don't run anybody in a lot of these places. Well, the funny part is that the Republicans actually do when they're in the same situation.
Exactly.
If you look at, like, for instance, the New York Young Republican Club, those people basically just walk in and take over.
Exactly.
Because here's this organization that is essentially moribund. They have nothing going. And then you get a bunch of junior grade fascists like Gavin Wax and Vish Burra and these people that walk in and say, you know what? We're in a major media center. We can get headlines for doing this. We can get a lot of publicity. Even if we never, you know, send a candidate, even if we never get anybody to actually win, we can get people to pay attention to us because of the name, because of where we are, and because of the novelty.
100%.
And if you somehow manage to elect a George Santos, it's a freaking bonus. It really is.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, it's one of those things. The Republicans have name recognition, right, in these traditionally Republican areas. So I think the young Republicans in New York State are a great example for the exact reason you said, right? Like, these people walked in, took over. They have the big R next to their name. And people then do the thing. It's the party.
Yeah. They're going into areas where people traditionally haven't thought would be competitive for them, so they didn't bother.
Exactly. Exactly. And then they just roll in and take over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what you see with school boards. It's what you see at the grassroots level of, like, the you know, the Moms for Liberty, you know, that side of kind of the grassroots attack on the public sector. Like, it's a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
The engagement for civil society has been in some places ceded to people who are anti that authority, right?
Right.
In the same way that we ceded the word patriot to them, the same way that we ceded the concept of, you know, a real America. And we have to start taking these back.
Yeah.
Like, because most people, you know, the polling just keeps showing, even though polling's terrible right now, it mm-hmm. keeps showing, like, this is not a majority view. Right? Like, no. MAGA is very much the minority view of this country. And that should reflect the work that has to be done then to actually shore up some sort of berm between fascist policy and what most people agree with. Because there is something there where this one thing can neuter the other.
And one thing I'm kind of hopeful about, thinking about it, what you said about the signs and how they're shifting from an overtly Trump message to a message mm-hmm. that is somewhat more neutral, if more extreme, that doesn't necessarily require being tied to a specific person.
Yes.
Is it possible that part of the reason they're shifting away from a Trump-focused message is because they realize that with a lot of these people that they need to win in the fall, Trump is kind of toxic?
That's my hope. That's my hope.
Yep. We had a primary election here recently in Washington, and Trump got about 75-ish% of the Republican vote.
Yeah.
And that's pretty consistent with what he seems to be pulling nationwide, even though he is effectively running unopposed at this point. All the other major candidates have wound down their campaigns or suspended them, but he's still not getting 100% of the vote. They're not unifying behind the leader. And I think the smart ones know this is kind of a problem because everything was so close. They can't win in some of these places without all of those voters.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense to me that they would be shifting to a message that doesn't necessarily require him to be the messenger. Like, let's talk about something other than him.
See, and that's my hope, right?
Right.
I think Trump, for the people who are fully on board, is always going to be the guy.
Sure.
But I think I think there has been some, just looking even at people I know whose family members were pro-Trump, what has happened in the last 4 years,
right?
Whether it's COVID, whether it's, you know, the attempted coup, and the stuff that's gone on both of those, some people who were absolutely diehard, nothing but Trump because he's the Republican ticket and whatever reasons, that, you know, those people who I've talked to and, you know, have shifted.
Right.
And not because they're afraid that they're going to get yelled at for liking Trump, but because genuinely, you know, there's been a moment of, well, I nearly died from COVID.
Yeah.
Or my family member nearly died from complications of COVID.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's just stuff that started to stack up. And, you know, as much as we all want to believe there's a level of, you know, like a monolithic Republican thing, that's just not the case. People, individuals who are affected in truly negative ways by what has happened, in some cases have changed their mind.
Yeah.
And that says a lot, actually, for what is possible here to avert true disaster. Right. And in 2016, I remember driving through rural places and just being like, people don't understand what's happening. Now, it feels much more existential because we know the risk, right? But also, it feels much less all-encompassing as it once did, for lack of a better word. That exact, I think, split that you're talking about, I think you can kind of feel it, right? It's not as unified. It's not as we're all in this together. It's very much, it has some of the feelings that it's kind of cellularized, right? Like, it's gone to different groups. It's, it's not just one thing. And I think that the more extreme that position gets for certain individuals within these communities, the harder it's going to be for the communities to say, we're not going to say anything.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm really interested to see next time I do this drive later this summer, if those appeal to heaven flags are still up.
Closer to election season.
Exactly.
Has it escalated? Has it de-escalated? Is this coming down?
Exactly. You know, I think there's going to be the perception. The media is going to create the perception that this is something that it's not. And that's, for me, one of the most important reasons to kind of bear witness, like I said, is there's not an understanding in some cases, right?
Right.
But there's also a misunderstanding based on this monolithic view that I don't think exists in the same way as it did. Just doesn't have that view. And the polling, like you were talking about, we're starting to see some of that reflected, I think. You know, if 25% are kind of having a uh-oh moment, that's actually a huge number, right?
Yeah.
And that actually is a fracture that, if someone in the opposing political party was smart, they'd be figuring out how to get into that crack and just twist until it's a mountain range.
So part of the reason you can tell, and this is where I think I really started buying into the concept of a fracture, is the 4th legislative district of Washington state. It's central Washington. It is the most Republican district in the state. It encompasses kind of the middle of the state, from areas like Tri-Cities through Yakima, through Wenatchee. This whole area is pretty Republican and has been historically. It's very rural, very farm-based, a lot of agriculture there. And it's been represented for a very long time by a guy named Dan Newhouse, who's a Republican. But Dan Newhouse was one of the few Republicans that voted to impeach Trump after J6. He was so upset with J6 and how all that went down that he actually voted to impeach Trump. Now, you can imagine how happy Trump was with him for that. Trump called him out personally and said, defeat this guy. So Washington State has an open primary for this.
Mm-hmm.
Top two candidates advance. So there was a Democrat running. There was this gentleman by the name of Congressman Newhouse, Dan Newhouse, was running.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had some MAGA candidates, and there were four of them. You had a guy named Lauren Culp, who's the sheriff of Republic, who ran against Inslee, was quoted complaining about how the election was stolen from him. It's an election that he lost by 250,000 votes, but, you know, I mean, somehow it was stolen. Don't know how that happened. Seattle. Darn Seattle.
Yep. Yep. Oh.
That was one of the candidates. He got about 15%. There was another candidate who had spent taxpayer dollars on going to Mike Lindell's election denier conferences, going and, you know, hanging out with the MyPillow guy.
Well, this is just, you mm-hmm. have the Hall of Champions here.
Oh, absolutely. And it gets better. He got about 11%. And there was another guy who was an actual, he was on a hold. The J6ers did nothing wrong. And I know because I was there. So we have an actual J6 participant here. And he got about 10%. And then we have somebody who is the chairman of the America First PAC. And it doesn't appear to be associated with Nick Fuentes. I went and looked. But this is definitely an absolute MAGA candidate. I hit his Twitter timeline. I was looking and he supports Charlie Kirk and he supports all the rest of this. So we're just going to kind of, we know where this dude's at politically.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he got about 5%. So what it broke out to was the Democrat got about 25%. Newhouse got about 25%. And the rest of these guys split 50% between them. And they're all MAGA candidates. And you start to realize, like, okay. So about 25% of these people would vote for a Democrat in a normal election. And about 25% are sane Republicans that are left over from the old days. And then about 50% are absolute, you know, fire-breathing MAGA fanatics.
Yeah.
And if they could have unified, if two of these people could have dropped out, they'd have won easy in a walkover. No problem. Yeah. But they didn't do that.
Yeah, the beauty of narcissism. The beauty of narcissism. Mm-hmm.
As a result, Newhouse was reelected in the fall, running against the Democrat, and he won by a pretty sizable chunk. But the fact is, there is a split here.
Yeah.
These two sides do not get along anymore.
No.
They don't agree on things.
No, look at what's happening with the GOP, right? Mm-hmm. Like Laura Trump takes over and they're trying to purge all the old Republicans, calling them, you know, calling them names and stuff. This is a fracture that if we want,
right,
as a population, can be used to end a lot of the power these people have taken in the last 7 years.
Right.
Because there's a race to the extreme, right, within the MAGA movement. And when you have something like that, where there's narcissism involved, there's a personal thing for each candidate.
Right.
And then they're just unpopular. You can actually make magic happen with that.
Oh, yes.
We've seen it. We've seen it.
Oh, yes.
And it's something that, like, probably should be thought through by not just political entities, but those of us who actually, you know, who do feel strongly that this is a direction that is not just dangerous, but antithetical to democracy. We need to remember that this is a minoritarian movement, right? Like, these people have an outsized voice in media,
right?
And that outsized voice wants you to believe that there's something inevitable, monolithic, and unstoppable about these people, when the reality is, as you know, you pointed out, you could fracture this like crystal.
Uh-huh. And it just comes down to finding a way to talk to the people involved and say, is this really what you believe?
That's it.
It's clear that somebody in your town is not happy with the choices you're being presented here. Is that you?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it makes sense that it would be, because I sure wouldn't be if my choices were between, man, I really kind of think Biden might be a little past it. I don't love some of this stuff that's being talked about in the schools, but this other crazy guy wants to cut all of my Social Security and end the war in Ukraine by taking all of our aid away from them and build a bigger wall and bomb Mexico and all of these other things that they've talked about down there. I think
exactly
that if you want to ever someday have a Republican Party to come back to, you need to break that fever.
Yeah.
And I think what needs to happen is for Trump to absolutely lose by that margin. Then they need to have that conversation. And that's a Republican conversation.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to help them on that one. They can sort that one out on their own. The thing is, I mean, regardless of the fracture, I think, you know, if the worst comes to pass and Trump wins again, those are the people you're going to want to make inroads with, right, to mount any kind of resistance to this in a real way. And like, there's some real thought here we have to put into this, because if the worst does come to pass, we're going to have a broad coalition that deals with this.
Right.
And that is going to require hard conversations between people who you might not traditionally agree with. It's going to take that to stop this in an electoral sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking about what Amanda said on your show about listening and talking to people who are against your ideals, but aren't fully lost to the fascist wave. And there's something very true about learning how to say, you know, we don't agree on these things politically,
right?
But we do agree that democracy matters. And that's going to be, those are the conversations that are going to have to happen, right, in the lead up to this election, is the one that is about democracy.
Yeah.
About what we want as a group, because a lot of people who have voted one way or another in the past, if they really have the conversation of, do you really want to live in a world where you won't have X, Y, or Z protections,
yeah,
where things won't exist that once did, where the safety nets that you've relied on, let's say as a farmer, right, some of the subsidies, those will go. Those are the conversations that, even if people might have been conservative, are going to hear, mm-hmm, because it's something that isn't just their livelihood, it's their life. It is their heritage in that location. And we don't have to threaten these people's life story to offer something better.
Yeah.
And the Republicans offer a story, but underneath that story is something that will effectively end that ability.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the conversation that, if you want to have it, it's going to be that kind of conversation, not the flashy, well, why do you support this? Who, that isn't going to matter as much.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, there are some of these people are supporting it because it has a capital R next to it, not because it's an understood facet of this other movement.
Right. And the meaning behind that capital R has changed quite a bit in the last few years.
Significantly.
And I think that maybe some of these people haven't quite thought it through yet.
They haven't.
They have a different idea of what it means to be a Republican in this country. And, you know, that's not just me, the lefty guy, talking. That's provable on paper. Look at the difference between what the platform was even in, you know, 2012 versus what it is now. How much has this party changed?
Oh, no question. No question. I mean, one of the things that I have done with people who have voted Republican in the past is I've read them sections of Project 2025.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing because there is a disconnect between what the goal, the stated goal for this movement is, and what people believe to be true.
Right.
And, you know, there are a lot of faults there, right? Like, that's a whole other episode, I think, to talk about where the fault lies for that. But the reality is, the Fox News and that stuff works really well. But if you have conversations and you really start to figure out where and what someone or a group of people are latching onto with that big R,
right,
you can see where the conversation has to go. And I, you know, these drives have been interesting for that reason. They kind of give me a roadmap in some ways as to the conversation that might need to be had with someone, individual, group, whatever, to at least hold the mirror up, like you said, where it's just like, you know, it's sometimes worth it to take a 10 seconds and just look at what this thing you're saying is.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people out there, like, if you tell them and you show them what you're going with, some people actually do listen. And they may not agree with you, but the seed's there.
Right. And I think that number is still higher than we probably assume it is if we spend too much time in our own bubbles.
100%.
Because we have been told these people are all just evil. These people are voting for this evil tyrant. And some of them are. But some of them are because they just haven't thought it through yet.
Exactly. One of the things that I've always really rallied against is the idea of red and blue states for that reason. It turns things into a monolithic space that doesn't actually exist.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, red states, quote unquote, are just are good people who are being ruled by a minoritarian authoritarian power.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you think of it that way, it becomes much more of a, how do we get people to understand that they're not alone in these places?
Right.
Well, that's going to require actual action from a national level, political movement and party that cares enough to go do that.
Right. And I think that that's something that the Democrats really have to put some money back into the locals, put some money back into some of these local races, even if they don't win, even if it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The Democrats right now have this advantage of being completely flush with cash. They are fundraising at ridiculous levels. And as a result, they can take some of this money and put it back into places like SQUIM, like Southern Illinois.
Yeah, 100%.
And look at what's actually going on here and start planting seeds. This is where I think that we really miss Howard Dean and the idea that we could go in and compete in every one of these districts. There were people in there,
yep,
that could compete in all of this. And I still, you know, Dean delegate in 2004 to my state caucuses, but I feel like that was something we absolutely should have listened to. We should get back to that.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of the things that made the Democratic Party historically the Democratic Party, right? Was the ground game in places that they might lose that were traditionally probably more conservative. And you have to take a risk to win something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that the Democratic Party has apparently kind of left behind.
They've gotten very risk averse in the last few years, but some battles are worth fighting, even if you don't win.
Yeah, well, sometimes the battle is the win, even if you lose, right? Mm-hmm. Because the battle itself gets people thinking about why it's important to even have the battle.
Yep.
And we have lost that part of it to the point where, like, people don't understand, like, part of politics sometimes is losing in places that traditionally you might lose in. But the reason you go there to do it is because there are a certain percentage who do believe, trust, and want that message.
Well, and if you don't even compete, they don't ever hear the other side, and it becomes not a candidate where you're talking about people on the left versus people on the right. It becomes people on the right versus people on the very, very right.
Exactly.
You don't even have that presence anymore, and it just gets more and more down that rabbit hole.
Hard right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we've seen that, right? Like, I think about in the past where we've seen Democrats kind of remove themselves from an area, and then inevitably a Nazi gets elected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's literally just how it works, right? And there's something to be said about not giving up.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, you know, we've ceded so much to the Republican machine where messaging wise, one of the things that we haven't and can't is that never give up attitude.
Right.
And the Democrats nationally have. But on the ground, that's just not the case. You see it in every state, whether it's a red state, somewhere like Tennessee, right?
Right.
Look at Tennessee. The Democrats there are fighting a fight that is a historic fight.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing so in a way that brings a lot of attention to them, rightly so. And in that way, they cracked the Republican machinery, right? Like, they understood if we keep talking about it, it brings these other things to the forefront every
time. Right.
And that's one of the few races where you can see it working. And these are things that should be done everywhere. Fight the democracy fight, you know, at the grassroots level, in every city and town you can. Mm-hmm. Because even if you lose, the people who are going to hear you will hear you.
If not for you, do it for your children, you know?
And your grandkids.
The next generation, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of planting trees and knowing that we're only going to see 2 years of that tree.
Yeah.
And the Democratic Party in general needs to get back to let's do some tree planting. Let's plant some real hard concrete roots
mm-hmm.
for our kids and our grandkids to build something really special from, because we have that ability.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we start having the conversation about what kind of place we really want to live in, but we can't do that until we establish some of those roots.
Yep. And that we need a floor first.
Right.
And that's the problem right now. There's no ground truth. And that's going to be the harder fight, frankly, is finding ground truth. And, you know, it's all a battle. But once there's an established ground that we can all share,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot easier than to start saying, well, okay, this is the ground. Where do we go from here?
Well, and that's why I think you're right that it's so important to talk to anybody who's still persuadable. Because that's what the Ground Coalition starts with. That's what the Ground Truth starts with.
Exactly.
Because you have a bunch of people who straight up just aren't at this point.
Yep.
They can go off and they can do their thing. There's not a lot we can do about that.
Yeah. Well, and we have to acknowledge in all of this that we're going to lose 25% of the country to a fever dream for an indefinite period of time.
Yeah.
And we're going to be fighting with the tendrils of that for generations.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a worthwhile fight.
Yeah.
You know, there are very few times I think that you get to look at a situation and say, this is actually correct.
Yeah.
This is a morally correct fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's on all of us. The corniness level of we're all in it together is outweighed by the reality of it. And if we want something better, then let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that means we have to understand that the messaging machine that we're facing is better funded than a lot of countries.
Mm-hmm.
It has some of the wealthiest and most powerful people on the planet on board. But these are all people that fold the minute there's any kind of real pushback against them.
Yep.
And generally, these people fold in a way where they self-destruct.
Yep.
You know, like if there's ever any real pushback on Musk, right, at a governmental level, he's going to fold for the same reason. At their heart, reactionaries of this kind have the ability to be narcissistically damaged in a way that will end them.
Right. But
it takes a lot to get there. You got to do this ground coalition and find the truth so you can start popping holes in things.
Right.
And that's the hard work.
And I think we finally understand that this is what we have to go do. And this is what we have to do a lot of between now and November. But I'm still optimistic.
I am too.
I'm still pretty optimistic about where all of this is. And if I had to look at it on that side, I would rather be us than them.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I'm more optimistic now than I was in 20.
Yeah.
I'm going to be super honest. Like, I'm more optimistic right now about the political outcome than I was in 20.
Right.
Either way we do this, it's going to be an ugly year. But I'm endlessly optimistic that this is going to be one of those years that people kind of have a come to Jesus moment, because there are definitely people who probably would have voted Trump and have in the past who, like I said, have been truly affected in a visceral, in your face, life altering way due to his actions and the actions of the party. And for some people, that is enough to get them to say, this is too much.
Yeah, it will. And it is.
It is. We're already seeing it. The media doesn't know how to do this because they need the horse race, but these fractures are there. They're real. And it's what we do with them that's going to count.
Absolutely. Carl, thank you for taking the time to talk to me again. It's always great to talk to you. I'm glad you're back, and we will do this again probably multiple times before the election.
I am really glad to be back. And yeah, I already have a couple more of these kind of planned out in my head. I'm going to go a different route and go into Missouri next time. And I have a feeling that's going to be as fun as it gets.
Oh, yes. All right. You stay safe, my friend. Take care.
You as well.
Thanks for listening to the Did Nothing Wrong podcast. If you want to hear more, you can find us on the web at didnothingwrongpod.com. Please make sure you subscribe to get our content straight into your inbox. You can also follow us on Twitter at GrizzaBJJ, GrizzaBJJ, as well as DNWPod. We're extremely grateful for paid subscriptions and donations that allow us to keep doing this important work. Thanks, and remember, everyone mentioned did nothing wrong.